that would be unequivocally the best 1-2-3 punch. I guess, is there 1-2-3 punch? Punch, punch, punch. Is there three?
Punch, punch, punch.
I'll bring it back. Hold on. I'll bring it back. I'm just discouraged by the audio.
Don't be discouraged. You just came from a sweet run that you should have lots of adrenaline right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe like put your hands on your hips. I think that's psychologically proven to make you more confident.
That seems right. Get behind that.
If you do the Superman pose, that's what they say. This is the most confidence.
Superman pose?
Yeah, where you put your hands, you ball up your hands into fists and you put them on your hips, like you're doing the Superman thing.
Balling up in the fist instead or of like, just or like clinching. Hands and hips.
Well, I get, yeah, clinching, I guess. A clinched fist on your hips.
It's interesting.
It helps with your confidence.
I'm a big hands on the hips guy, not necessarily clenched fists.
All right.
Give it a try, though.
All right, I'm going to start this if you're ready to stop talking about your hips.
I am. Simulate the music and go.
All right, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Podcast and Chill, podcast where we chill for our second annual... Wow, we got a cough right out the gate. That's impressive. For our second annual opening day preview podcast, we have our friend Kevin Drain on, who has been on many a times, but most notably for the opening day 2018 podcast.
I mean, yeah, this is a national holiday for the two of us, and the fact that we can now celebrate it every year with an annual podcast is just next level stuff.
This one is going to be more optimistic than last year's, I think, because we didn't know we were going to be as good as we were last year. Maybe I didn't know. You knew a little bit. You could feel it.
Well, it's funny you say that because you are the ultimate pessimist of a fan, whereas in I am the ultimate optimist. Hope springs eternal in spring, as they say. And I actually am going to disagree with you just right out of the gate.
Good.
I would say that, if anything, people are a lot more jaded than we were last year because we were coming off that like euphoric run. Everybody was young and good. Everything went great. And we're like, oh, we got Stanton for nothing. We're going to just like run to the World Series. And then look what happened last year. Injuries. Sanchez was very bad when everybody thought he was just going to be a stud, and the Red Sox won the World Series of all people.
You know, so, that's interesting that you're making that distinction of like how we're projecting the team to do in terms of literal win-losses versus how we feel about the team right now. Because we feel maybe not great, but our team is probably supposed to be better this year than they were last year, right?
I would agree with that for just a bunch of reasons that we can get into. I mean, obviously, right off the gate, people are angry that, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, two of the 10 best players in baseball, and the Yankees didn't even really try. Like, let's be real, they didn't make a contract offer and they didn't even try to get him. But their strategy of trying to spread out their money to make, I would say, marginal gains, but I feel like it's a little bit more significant than that. I think that it's going to make us a lot better of a team. I think our rotation looks a lot better going into the season. And, I mean, Sanchez is not going to be that bad again.
Shoot your whole wad on and just give away all of your talking points right off the bat, I'm going to stop you from yourself.
Let's first
do the free agency bit because that's okay. The most recent. So I wrote down Yankees, Harper, Machado. I don't know if I want to do why didn't we sign them, because we sort of know why. You just sort of outlined it. The Yankees don't want to spend that kind of money on guys who they don't seem to think are elite players. And, you know, there's some statistical evidence to show that Harper is not that guy. There's some evidence that could show that he could be that guy. But I think to not sign one of them in a year where we actually had some money available that we used it on, I guess you'd call like stopgap guys. I mean, we didn't pay Tulowitzki very much, but we signed other guys. Like we gave Hap some money, we gave DJ some money. So it's not money that we didn't have. It's just money we chose to spend elsewhere. So that is, I think we should read into that as like, oh, it's not, it's a good thing or a bad thing. We should read into it as, okay, now we know what the Yankees think. Whether it's good or bad, we know how they're going to do business from now on. And this is kind of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the new world we're living in. Obviously, it's an analytics-driven world, and the Yankees are not the Yankees of old George Steinbrenner years.
We're like the Tampa Bay Rays, the Devil Rays. We're like how the Devil Rays used to manage their team.
No, that's
how I feel. That's how I feel. Because it makes me upset. that we're not doing anything.
I get that, but I guess you could say we're like the Devil Rays with like a 10 times the budget. I mean,
we're like a super big Devil Ray.
Super big Devil Ray. Yep. Just a gigantic Devil Ray.
Yes.
I mean, I'm with you. I get the sentiment because there's a fan in me that is like screw all this, like being smart and like fiscally responsible stuff. And I'm angry. Trust me. We can definitely get into it more about how upset I am about various ways of how this free agency went. But I do understand why they did what they did. It's not like this is ridiculous, doesn't make any sense. Like, it makes sense. It's just I disagree with how they went about it. I would have obviously done things differently, but the team is clearly deeper than last year. There's talent everywhere, and that bullpen is, tell you what, that's going to be really nice. Whenever we get a lead past the fifth inning, we're going to feel good about our chances to bring it home. So they definitely operate differently, but I definitely have couple points I'd like to make on that I've actually been reading and thinking about over the last couple days.
All right, so I want to ask you, and we started talking about this off wax a couple days ago. Mike Trout signed a massive contract, $430 million, over 10-year deal, which I guess the 10-year deals in the history of the league, or maybe 9-plus-year deals, are probably 50-50 if they work out or not. And there's varying degrees on if they quote-unquote work out. Does that mean were they worth it or not? I think that's probably a better question. Some people might think the A-Rod deal was not a good deal because of how it ended, and that's just not true. Now, we'll see on the Joey Votto deal when that sort of gets going deeper into it on the back end. Prince Fielder, that was a bad one. Like, we could do this all day. We talked about a couple of these 9-plus-year deals. For Mike Trout, no-brainer, sign him for as long as you can. So what I want to ask you, and I pose this question to you, the percentage chance that you think Mike Trout is going to be on the Angels when his contract is over is what?
95%.
That's incredible that you say that.
I'll pose this to you first then. Why not? Tell me why not.
I think that there's a scenario where, and I don't know the Angels ownership situation, but I don't know, maybe the Angels are changing owners in the next 12 years, and the team is not winning, so they need to cut costs. We just saw that happen in Miami. And while I think that was a little bit of an outlier of a situation, I think that stuff like that does happen. Could Mike Trout also want a trade? The Angels, I was just looking at this earlier today in preparation. The Angels have made the playoffs one time in his career. One time for the best player in potentially the history of baseball. And it's not Mike Trout's fault. Mike Trout's really good. But in a sport like baseball, you can't have one guy that just lifts you completely into the postseason. Mm-hmm. And players don't affect the game that way. So yeah. I think those two situations, cutting costs and possibly Trout might not wanting to be there long term after there's possibly no team success. I'm not saying there won't be, but they still have years to pay Albert Pujols, and I'm just not sure how they're going to, you know, make this team amazing. I mean, I'm looking at their over-under for this year. It's 83. You know, it's not great. That's not going to get you in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So, and they could easily get into the playoffs this year. I think there are some spots open in the American League, but the American League is tough. And
that's true.
I don't know. It's possible they miss the playoffs again. And I don't know, in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, you don't think Mike Trout's like, man, I wonder if I'm going to ask out of here. I think it's possible. I think all those things combined, I would say it's probably closer to 50-50. I think you're underrating the possibility a little bit.
Well, I can just poke a couple holes in your argument.
All right,
just right off the
poke
bat.
Away. Poke away.
Because I know you said you didn't know about the Angels' ownership situation. So,
okay, give it to me.
And you compare it to the Marlins. And let me just get into that quick. Is that the Miami Marlins ownership situation was absolutely atrocious. Jeffrey Loria literally broke down two World Series winning teams. That's like what they did. They won the World Series and then they just traded everybody. So, and always financially strapped in a market in Miami that, as you know, for every sport really, is a fickle sports market.
Extremely.
Where, you know, none of the teams there are necessarily excelling financially. So very, very different. Like that whole Miami situation is something that shouldn't happen. And I could even get into you about why it shouldn't have happened anyway, of that whole trade-off of everyone. But the Angels actually have one of the more, like, the better ownership situations of any team in baseball. Their owner, Artie Moreno, is very cash. Like, he's got lots of cash, lots of capital, very rich, one of the richest owners in baseball, actually. And he's always invested in the team. I mean, we can go into, obviously, the horrible deals that were Josh Hamilton and the current deal for Albert Pujols still, which is just...
still going on.
Wow. Which is just terrible. But he's always put money into the team. I know they're in Anaheim, but it's still the Los Angeles market. And a couple of years ago, they actually hired Cashman's right-hand guy, Billy Epler, as their GM.
Right.
He's made a lot of really good moves, and he's one of the best young GMs in baseball. So this is a team, obviously, maybe... I mean, you're talking about a team that still could very well make the playoffs this year.
Yes.
I mean, maybe a second wildcard team, but we're not talking about a move like Manny to the Padres, with a team where, like, they've always been cash strapped, and that team might never be good.
Right.
This is a team like the Angels that has never truly been bad in our lifetime, and well backed in LA. I don't see them ever getting to a point where they're a dumpster fire that Mike Trout, being the guy who he is going to ask out. You got to look at the personality of the player as well. Trout is very underspoken kind of guy, soft spoken guy. He's not the type to just, like, would speak up to ownership and be like, I want to get the heck out of here, unless it was really a dumpster fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point to make. I wonder if it's maybe not a change of ownership. You know, you sometimes see this with sport teams, specifically in basketball, because the salary cap is different and luxury tax is different. But to have a general manager or decision maker produce a team that is very expensive but not very good, oftentimes maybe the owner will make a change of GM, and maybe the new GM thinks differently. So maybe the owner overrides the GM and won't allow him to trade Mike Trout. I mean, that's probably more likely. It's much more likely. But I'm just saying it's possible. I think a couple of those things combined. But you made some good points there. So no, yeah. Mike Trout to the Yankees. I shouldn't get excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. Don't get yourself excited. And I will say again, it's really folly for us to really put odds on anything when we're talking about something like that's a 12-year duration. I mean, we're both going to be 36 when that contract's done.
That's not even a real time.
That's not a real time, not a real age. I know. But, like, really, when you think about that, I mean, anything could happen. Mike Trout could actually, like, you know, fall off a cliff and die tomorrow. Like, a lot can happen.
Yeah. All right. Actually, you know what? No more free agency talk. Let's just get into the Yanks. Over-under for the Yankees right now. Actually, this could be a little outdated, but I'm seeing 97. 97 wins for the Yankees. That is tied for the second most with Boston. Only Houston has a higher over-under. And this is actually from a month ago, so they could have changed a little bit. But I don't think too many league-altering trades any movement has happened. So I'd say it's about right. Say the Yankees are going to be the second to, you know, third or fourth best team in baseball this year. And that's, you know, you're happy with that. Are you anticipating that happening? How could that not happen? Like, what is the formula for the Yankees to have an 87-win season?
Oh, wow. So you're talking if they were to have close to, like, their first losing season since 1992.
Yeah.
Like, how would that happen with this roster?
Right. I probably wouldn't go to losing. I'd probably say, like, mid-80s. Like, how does that happen and not 98?
Mid-80s is losing, isn't it?
Well, oh, no. It's 162. Not. No, it's not. 162. Your math is
I'm
fraught.
An engineer. What is wrong with me?
You should know this.
That's disappointing. But okay. So for that to happen, we got to talk about, like, catastrophe off the bat. Like, Aaron Judge... like, just destroys his shoulder, needs surgeries out for the year.
Okay, wait, hold on. So I think a better way to do this would be not just like, okay, everyone gets hurt. I think...
But that's... Okay, that's really...
Yeah, but that's
going to
be that's going to be a mixture of things. Like if you had said, like, okay, you know what, Gary Sanchez does what he did last year again, and he can't get back, and first base is a major hole. Like, Luke Voit doesn't do what he did towards the end of the season. He's more of a journeyman, and we get nothing from left field. And, you know, to just say that Judge is going to get hurt and we're screwed, I think maybe if you said Severino, he just sort of is, like, on and off, and he misses a couple starts, and, like what are some other things? Like, those are sort of the top-line ones.
Okay.
Give me some more.
Well, then
I know you have
them. I really don't see a logical way of performance-wise that this team is that bad. Like, that this team doesn't get to 90 wins. Because obviously you brought up some really good points. First base is a huge question mark. What is Greg Bird? Who is the man they know is Greg Bird?
I'm so upset that he's going to be... I'm so upset he's going to be on the opening day roster. I'm just so upset about it.
I know. It's just killing you that he's going to be in the opening day lineup. I know that.
Hal Steinbrenner on the radio today mentioned our young core, and I almost lost my fucking mind when he said Greg Bird. He said Judge.
Greg Bird guy.
He said Judge, Stanton, Bird, and Severino. I kid you not. I almost spit out my coffee when I heard him say Greg Bird.
I know, but I told you I'm like slightly back in. The door's ajar. We'll get into that later. But so first base, obviously, like, and then Luke Voit. We don't know what he is. If Luke Voit is, I mean, there's no way he is what he was when he hit 14 home runs and what 132 at bats. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
He's not that, but you can look at those underlying stats like his hard hit rate and the way he controls the strike zone, his chase rate and things like that, that he's definitely good and was undervalued when they traded for him. But we got to see how good he actually is. Like, is he really, like, somehow we found a middle of the order thumper at first base out of nowhere? Or is he just pretty good? We don't know yet.
And even if he's pretty good, and I'll interrupt you, even if he's pretty good, that's a huge, huge win for us because we were getting nothing from first base before.
Right. I mean, the last productive first base season was Mark Teixeira in 2015. Right. Yeah. And he even got hurt. Yep. That was the last time we had a fully productive first baseman. Yeah. But
not great.
And that was Greg Bird's big appearance too. So that's when I thought he was good. So right back at you with Greg Bird stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm going to go to more question marks on the team. You can easily look around and see things going wrong, I guess, with Troy Tulowitzki being our starting shortstop. I've never felt good about that. Never felt good about that being said or anything like that. We're talking about a guy who has not played a professional baseball game since 2017.
That's not great. It's not great. That's not what you want, as our old manager would say. I really wanted, it's funny that we're circling back to Tulo because I wanted him so bad for the Yankees once upon a time. And mm-hmm. I thought that contract he signed was going to be a bargain. And did not turn out to be that exactly. So.
Yes, I know. Obviously, Tulowitzki was, not even that long ago, was one of the best players in all baseball. It's a crazy thing to say. But I don't know if you can really count on him for anything. I don't know why they want to pencil him in as a starting shortstop no matter what. I mean, he's definitely not going to play shortstop 6-7 days a week. It's going to be more like 4. But if he gives you nothing, then that's why you signed DJ LeMahieu, because then Glaber just moves to short and LeMahieu's the everyday second baseman. And that's fine. But, I mean, that's a clear issue that they have going into the season.
Okay. Now, I want to... Actually, I don't know if it's Kev, if it's you moving around a little bit, but I'm feeling hearing some weird static coming from your mic a little bit. So if you could just sort of just be a little more slightly still. I want to ask you about the rotation. So we're going to see Severino out for a while, which I'm very concerned about, shoulder problems. I know he's technically on schedule, and we're probably going to be more cautious with him than we would with most guys, but Savvy's out. CeCe's going to be suspended. So our rotation is what now? It's Tanaka, it's Pax, it's Hap, and Domingo? I mean...
It is Tanaka, Paxton, Hap, Herman, and actually, Loaiza is what was announced.
Hmm, interesting.
Yes.
See, but... I have Luis Cessa Nation in all caps in my notes here, and I just wanted to throw that out to you and see what you think about it.
Well, that's a very nondescript thing. Not sure exactly what that means.
It means whatever you want it to mean. That's exactly what it means.
That's fair.
What does it mean to you?
Well, here's what I think it means. I think it means that Luis Cessa, this is do or die for him because he's had options. And he had himself a hell of a spring training, and he's always been a guy with a good power fastball and a nice slider, but really not a great control, never seemed like he was really like confident on the mound, and a guy who was the bane of your existence for a while. A la Greg Bird. You were not a Luis Cessa guy.
I was not a Luis Cessa guy. I mean, I'd be happy to be wrong about him, but I'm not a big fan.
But as I've said to you, I think a lot of fans are really unreasonable. They always say, oh, teams need more pitching. It's like, well, every single team needs more pitching. How many teams truly have 6, like, legit, no doubt, MLB starters? I can answer that already. Nobody has
Nobody.
That. Not a single team. So with your depth, you want them – really what the Yankees have is like what you want for depth. They got 3 guys out of their starting 5 who are young and interesting. for lack of a better way to put it. They're young, unproven guys, but they all have, you know, various reasons why they're interesting, be it stuff, be it command, anything like that, so that they could provide you good innings, like Domingo Germán did for a good month and a half last year before he fell off the cliff.
Yeah. Before our old friend Ivan Nova did for years, on and off.
Ivan Nova.
Yeah.
Wow. You brought him up.
I love talking about Ivan Nova. It's such a good test case.
But I think Sessa can be a big part of the staff this year. I really do. I think if he looks really calm, cool, and collected. He talks about how he really changed his whole view on baseball, and he's like just having a lot more fun with things and stopped trying to take everything so seriously that he'd stress himself out and get tense. Lose control of fastball command, which, as we know, is just the first thing you need to be a starting pitcher.
Yeah,
really the main thing. But I really think he can be valuable this team, either be it long relief or, you know, obviously he's going to make at least 10 starts this year, being as what I think the best six. Well, he's really either sixth or seventh man. But he's going to be important to this team one way or another this year. And it's a make or break year for him, obviously, as I said, too.
I got to say, I'm really a little disappointed.
Or whatever.
Kev, I got to say, I'm a little disappointed in you that you didn't give me some spring training ERA zip numbers from Sessa.
I'm never going to say that.
I'm a little disappointed in you, I got to say.
You know for a fact that I will never, never, never talk specific spring training numbers. Not once.
So
what do they mean? What do they mean?
They mean nothing. And
they mean absolutely nothing.
I've said this to you many times, but I treat spring, I just treat it as fun, like, oh my God, baseball's fucking back. But
yeah.
I'm more of a, if you do well, I don't care, but if you do bad, I'm worried. So I'm never happy, but I can just be worried.
Here's what I always say for spring training and for everybody out there going forward. It's obviously fun, but there's only one question you need to ask if it was a successful day. Did anybody get hurt? Is the question no? All right, successful day. Don't
well,
care what happened.
Kev, that's a great segue because half of our team is hurt.
Yes,
we have Aaron Hicks, who just signed a pretty lucrative contract that we both liked at the time, $70 million over 10 years. Whoa, did I say that? No, $70 million over 7 years, 10 per year.
10
there
million
we go.
A year,
there
yes.
we go. You had me. I had you. Then we have Betances, who has a sore shoulder, I believe, correct? And we have Severino, who is also hurt. And I was reading a story today about all of the injured Yankees and sort of their timetables and the most new information that we have about them. And then I saw Larry Rothschild's name on there in the story about how he's like spending more time in Florida. And I tricked myself. And I thought that they were saying that Larry Rothschild was hurt, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, is our pitching coach is he gone down too? Does Larry Rothschild need a new hip? What is happening?
Tommy John for Larry.
Larry's out. Larry's on the 15-day DL for Rothschild.
I mean, it's concerning, but it's not like time to hit the panic button on anyone yet. I mean, it's really it's more annoying than anything that Severino is going to miss the first month because he's going to have to really just basically do spring training all over again. But
that's
the end of the day, if he has no damage in his shoulder, it was just inflammation. And if it goes away and we never hear about it again, then success. You know, so rather have him speak up, get shut down for a month, and then try to pitch through it and actually, you know, get a tear in there or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm okay with that.
I mean,
same with Hicks in his back. Like, I'm sure it's nothing huge, but it's like they just committed all that money to him, so they're not going to have him destroy his back, which is something that could, you know, end a career.
Right. Really. I mean, to say that he has chronic back pain, that hurts a little bit after just signing a new contract. But I think I'm more concerned about Severino, obviously, because of what he is to us. But I sort of want to get into this thing about Betances. Because, as we both know, our bullpen is extremely loaded, especially in the back end. But
right.
And we have guys that are going to be there long term. Chapman is going to be with us for a while. And I'm curious, is there, and I asked you this last year too, is there a possible trade scenario for Dylan Betances this season?
Oh my God, we're doing this again.
Why? So the reason not to trade him is because what teams tend to trade for bullpen help? This is what you told me last year. It's usually good teams. So why would the Yankees give bullpen help to another good team and lose on their compensation pick? Okay, I understand all of that. Having said that, when this offseason comes, what are the chances that the Yankees are going to shell out a huge contract for Betances to keep him here for 5 more years? I don't think it's large.
I mean, relievers don't get 5-year contracts other than there's only been one, and that's Chapman. So I don't think...
But what did Andrew Miller get? I feel like he got paid. Was this shorter, though?
He just got 2 years.
Really? Damn.
Yeah. Relievers don't get giant deals normally. I mean, Craig Kimbrell was looking for a giant deal, and where's Craig Kimbrell right now?
No, that's true.
Unemployed still. I'm not. I just don't think trading makes any sense. And I've said this to you a million times, like you said. You know, because it just makes the big league roster worse when you're in a win now mode. And the only way it would make the big league roster better is if you could get a mid rotation starter or better. Which, again, as we said, only team you're going to trade him to is to a contending team. Why would a contending team give up one of their top three starting pitchers? That doesn't make sense.
They wouldn't. I think you probably don't trade him because you lost David Robertson this offseason, which is still completely head scratching to me. Why the Yankees couldn't pony up a little bit. I mean, what did he end up getting? Like, was it 10 a year?
Well,
11? It was 11 a year for Robertson going to the Phillies. That made no sense to me.
There was something weird going on with that. Like, there was a whole thing with the postseason shares thing that got leaked where it's like him and the Yankees didn't have a great relationship at the end or anything like that. But, I mean, really, they're really just replacing Robertson with Ottavino in a way. And Ottavino's actually cheaper and could be better going forward. I think he actually will be better going forward. So,
well,
I mean, I think you said both of them in my mind. But
I think better is strange because you saw in the postseason who Boone trusted to pitch in big moments. And it was Robertson. It wasn't Betances. And I don't know. It's hard to put a price on that. I understand what you're saying. But, like, the trust factor for managers is that's at least interesting. It's noteworthy to me.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, Robertson was a guy in the postseason and somebody you could trust out because he'd been there a lot. But, I mean, I'm indifferent to it. I do love Robertson. But if they think Ottavino is going to be better than him going forward, I mean, who am I to discount their kind of evaluation? It's gone so well the last couple of years that they've earned the benefit of the doubt for me on most moves until I see otherwise.
You're drinking the Kool-Aid. I understand it.
I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid.
Sounds like you're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Look at how much success they've had as far as the players they've acquired and stuff like that. I mean, they're basically hitting on everything recently. So who am I to really discount that? I mean, and Ottavino's great, too. It's not like Ottavino's some schmuck. I mean, he arguably had the best year of any free agent reliever last year. So.
All right, I want to talk about two of our young bucks now. One guy who I really feel like has been overlooked in this whole offseason where the team is going forward, or maybe it's just not talked about, is Gleyber Torres. Remember that guy? Like, does he ever get talked about? Like, the whole offseason was, who are the Yankees going to sign to their pitching staff? Are they going to trade Andujar? You know, what is going to happen at first base? What's going to happen in left field? But does anybody remember that Gleyber Torres is on our team? Like, do you feel like he's been overlooked the entire offseason?
Yes, and I feel like a big portion of that is because Andujar also had such a big year that you almost forget. Like, oh, yeah, that Gleyber Torres guy was also there, too. You know, one of the top prospects in all baseball.
And he's better.
Yeah,
and he's better.
It's interesting because it seems like, yeah, you do forget about him because he's, like, the sixth most interesting guy. But Gleyber is, like, I mean, was hyper-elite prospect. This is a guy who, I believe, batted around 275, 24 dingers. Strikeout rate was a little high last year, 25%. But we're talking about a guy who is 21 years old thrown into a pennant race. So, obviously, there's some pressing going on and there's a learning curve. So, Gleyber could be a guy who just turns into a bona fide all-star this year. And I think that actually might happen. He's a guy who can really become one of the, like, top two or three hitters on this team as quickly as this year, which is insane to say, but it's also true.
Yeah, I think we were both pretty surprised last year. I mean, we all knew that he was sort of this, like, all-around guy who could, you know, he could field, he can hit for average, he could run the bases a little bit, although I guess I was a little surprised at how not fast he was, even though he was okay. But for a middle infielder, you know, you expect an absolute speedster. But I think we were both pretty shocked, at least of how quick it came, about how much power he had. I mean, what did he end up? I'm just gonna look up his home runs from last year because
it was 24.
24 home runs for a guy playing his first full season
as a 21-year-old.
I mean, that doesn't happen. I mean, those are numbers of, like, a bona fide power hitter, pretty much. I mean, not a lot of guys hit 25 plus home runs this season.
No, and especially as a middle infielder too. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's a natural shortstop who just happens to be playing second because that Gregorius guy normally plays over there and he's pretty good. I don't know. I'm a huge Glaber guy. I couldn't talk about it enough. And it's funny you say that because I was just thinking the same thing. It's almost with, like, you know, Judges and the Stantons and, like, what's Luke Voit? Like, is he really this guy? And, like, Andujar and his defense and all that stuff. You keep forgetting, like, oh, yeah, Glaber Torres.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, Glaber Torres. Like, that's, like, if you could take one thing from this podcast, it'd be like, oh, yeah, Glaber Torres. Because that guy's fucking good. And no one has talked about him at all this whole offseason, which is probably a good thing. Because you can sometimes see when, you know, a lot of smoke gets put up people's butts and people are hyping you up all offseason. Sometimes it doesn't work out so well. But I think for Glaber, this is probably good. The other young buck I want to mention who is much less good than Glaber Torres is Clint Frazier. I've read a lot of Clint Frazier is coming back stories. I've read a lot of Clint Frazier is really buckling down, but he's really going to try to show off his personality in the Yankee uniform and all these like puff whatever pieces. Now I'm a big Clint Frazier fan now because you've turned me on to that because his talent is his talent. But do you think we'd almost be better off if we just had like a league average left fielder who we could count on and play good baseball for us versus this? I don't know, how do you want to describe it? Like this upside prospect? Because I feel like that's what he is. He's an upside prospect.
Yeah, he's still an upside prospect, and obviously he's still getting up to speed after all the scary stuff last year with the concussion and all the lingering symptoms of that. So he's still like an elite prospect type guy. I mean, maybe not a top 20-ish guy anymore, even though he can't be a prospect, but he's still like a high talent guy. And I mean, you're talking about having a league average major leaguer right now. I don't think so, because I think Clint's ceiling is still higher than that. You don't need him right now. I mean, you got, in a perfect world, everybody's healthy. Gardner's playing left as well as Stanton. So I still think Clint can be a above average everyday left fielder. I really do. I mean, with that bat speed, he's got such natural raw power. I think he's got better hitting acumen than people give him credit for. And he's at least average out there defensively. So Clint, we're going to see him in the Bronx at some point this year. But I think it's going to be more towards the middle of the year. He's going to need to take those reps and at-bats that he missed all last year in AAA before he's really up to speed and can actually help the team. But I do think he's going to help out the team when the inevitable injury hits. We need an outfielder who can, you know, really be, I don't want to say a difference maker, but make any kind of impact. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't. You know, this is sort of, I think, where you and I have like this jumping off point is because it seems like, at least at this point, that we're just going to be so solid everywhere else that we just need someone who's not going to lose it for us. Like, we can't have, like, you know, a Tyler Wade type of person who's just going to hit like 190. Like, we just can't have that. We just need an average player who is going to, you know, hit 250. You know, have an on-base percentage of like 32 and then just like be good. And because we're not going to count on you. You're going to be hitting 8 and like we don't need you to do well because we have all these other things in place. So, I mean, that's why this is just so interesting because he's not that guy. But it's almost better that Clint Frazier isn't that guy because it increases the upside for our entire team and we don't need him to be that guy, at least not right away like you mentioned. So is there another Yankee guy who you're going to be, I guess, watching closely that you really need to see what this guy is going to do this year? I mean, there are a lot of make or break seasons, guys, for our team this year. But, like, is there one dude that you don't know what you're going to get from that you really want to know more than anybody else?
I mean, Greg Bird's obviously an easy answer, but we already talked about him a lot. So I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball at you. My guy for that has got to be Tommy Canley.
Ooh, speaking of curveballs, although I guess he doesn't have a curveball, but
no, he's a changeup guy.
Yes,
but
that was good though. That was good. That was witty.
Yeah, he's obviously when we first got him for that half year, we got him from the White Sox. He was, you know, looking like an elite reliever who we had 4 years of team control over. And last year, I mean, he was definitely feeling the effects of the previous year in the long season and the postseason. He wasn't able to really. I mean, he was high 90s with little effort, and last year he was giving full effort and sacrificing command to get it just up to 95. So that was like his big issue was with arm strength last year. And talk make or break, this guy, he's out of options too. So he's obviously going to be in the opening day bullpen. But if he really struggles again like last year, the Yankees either trade him or just cut him loose. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he looks, if he looks poised again, if that arm strength is back. I think if his arm strength is back, he's going to get back to being an effective reliever. And just that adds just another kind of lockdown. He couldn't be another lockdown arm up there, which is really scary to think that the Yankees could push that up to like six guys who you could like just power relievers who are locked down. But I think he's very interesting, and we're going to have to see, especially early on in the year, what he looks like, if he looks like Canely of old, and what he can do for the team.
No, that's a really good pick, because he is so interesting. Like, that guy had some of the biggest ups and some of the lowest downs of any dude on the team. Like, you could put him with Greg Bird, like, right there, of, like, guys who just had these huge swings that we just don't know where we're going to get from.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for me, if I'm looking at the roster right now of guys that like I'm interested to see, like, I feel like a lot of us are just sort of baking in improvement for Gary Sanchez, because really you can't get much worse than what he did last year, at least for mm-hmm. the version of himself that he is. I don't know. Like, I just assume that Gary is going to be better this year, and maybe that's wrong for me to do, but I'm just penciling it in pretty much.
I mean, I would agree with you. We're talking about a guy who's like got some all-time hitting talent for a catcher, like just like really uber talented for a catcher. And I just want to point to one stat for you about last year. His batting average on balls in play, which is normally, I think a league average is like high 200s for balls in play, maybe even up to 300. I got to look that up. But his BABIP last year was 197, which would point to a lot of that, coupled with the fact that his hard hit rate was still really good, coupled with the fact of what our eyes tell us, that he was very, very unlucky last year.
Yeah.
Like, just it seemed like every time you hit one on the screws, somebody was right there.
Right. So. And guys who hit the ball so hard, like Sanchez and like Judge too, like, or Stan, like, we have a couple of those guys, that you can just have these stretches where, man, just nothing goes your way. And like, baseball is that game. Like, baseball yeah. will do that to you. So,
I mean, we're talking about a guy who, by all metrics, was one of the unluckiest guys in baseball last year. And I mean, that's not the only reason he wasn't good last year. Obviously, just nagging injuries all season, developing some bad habits at the plate, all types of like mental reasons even could get into why he had a bad year. But definitely luck was one reason why it was so bad.
And like, so I think a lot of those guys that, all right, those guys are going to be better this year, I think. I think somebody we might have to at least put our antenna up about that might actually do worse this year is, I think we might have to start thinking about Chad Green as maybe not as shut down as he was, just because it's so hard to do what he's done year after year after year. Like, you were just mentioning how relievers don't get these five-year contracts. Well, if Chad Green was going to do what he's done the past 2 years and do it again this year, like, he would have gotten this massive contract, because like, what you can do in the bullpen with a guy like him, having him go two innings, three innings, and giving up, you know, zero or maybe one run, like, that's so valuable, especially in the postseason, that I think it would be a little selfish of us to just assume that Chad Green is going to be Chad Green again.
I mean, I guess with any reliever, that's a question. Chad had some struggles last year, but I think he can pencil him in again to be, I mean, maybe not as good as he was in his, you know, breakout first year, where he was just, like, damn near untouchable the whole season.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Let me ask you this. So, do you think that year over year, the 9-8 inning guy, if he's just going to do, like, he has that role. He's the 9th inning guy. He's the closer. Or he's the 8th inning guy. He's a setup man. Like, those situations and those guys, to me at least, feel more, like, they're more ritual. They have, like, okay, this is who this guy's going to be year over year over year. For a guy like Green, it seems like these long reliever guys, they're not the same in terms of their longevity. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but that's like kind of like us growing up when it was all about bullpen roles and teams only had like one or two guys who were great, and then everybody else was just kind of like this like middle relief drudge of, you know, mediocrity.
Yeah, like, and a lot of Alfredo Aceves out there.
There's a lot of just great arms in the bullpen. So I get it. Like, there's that feeling that, like, okay, if you're not, like, you know, a big-time setup man or a closer, then you're, like, really volatile. But I think that in the modern game of baseball, you can point to guys like, I mean, Dellin Betances has never been the closer. I mean, obviously he's had some issues, but, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's a four-time All-Star and has never had a full bad season.
Right.
You know, and he's been a great reliever the whole time. So obviously there is volatility with relievers, but I don't think you can expect that same kind of volatility that we got used to in earlier years, like back in the 2000s.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good point. Do you have any other, like, overarching things that you want to get off your chest about this team? Because those are all of my notes. I mean, there's a lot more guys we can, you know, talk for 10 years about. Like, we haven't even touched Tanaka. We haven't even touched how happy we are to have Sonny Gray out of here. Is there other things that you need to get off your chest? We haven't even mentioned Zach Britton. Like, are there guys that you're interested in that we haven't mentioned, or I guess storylines, plot lines for the season?
Yeah, I mean, Britton, I think he's going to have a much better year. He's going to be more of the Britton of old, because he was coming off a tough Achilles injury and even spoke to it in the offseason about how last year he felt like he never had his legs under him because he, you know, was still coming back from Achilles and he just didn't have the strength in his legs that he was used to. He says he got that back. But, I mean, as far as things to say, that Judge guy is pretty good. I think that he'll be pretty decent this year, at least league average, don't you say?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, it seems like a fair thing to say. Man, it's again, any kind of talking about weaknesses on this team feels nitpicky.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we just said that we're having the second or third highest over under in the entire league. So this is all nitpicky. I mean, we could also say that, like, hey, I wish Giancarlo Stanton had a better 2 months of the season. But, like, the guy, did he have over 100 RBIs? Like, we're nitpicking. That's what we're doing right now, because it's what we have to do.
Yeah, which is, you know, the great thing about being a Yankee fan now is the team is loaded with talent, and obviously we're looking at ways that it can go wrong, but we haven't even really talked about the ways that it can go right, because I feel like it's so obvious to everyone. So why even address it? Like, stuff like, I mean, obviously Judge is amazing, amazing, amazing player, one of the top 10 players in baseball. And Stanton, I mean, he, again, super off year for him, everybody said, in his first year in the AL, but he still had 38-0. That's a productive season.
Incredibly. Yes. Yeah, people sleep on it.
As far as things to talk about, my personal favorite move, and one of my new favorites, is this: the Paxton move can be so huge.
Oh yeah, give me like 30 seconds on Paxton. Like, what am I gonna expect? Like, if you're like me and wasn't a super big Mariners fan last year, wasn't locked in on Seattle games, what am I gonna expect from Pax this year?
I mean, we're talking about a guy, Big Maple, big lefty, who has always had injury problems in his career, but they've been more of the fluky variety rather than, like, you know, arm, like, elbow, shoulder injuries. They've kind of been like, you know, like, he gets hit by a line drive and gets a, like, contusion, he's out for a couple months. Those kind of injuries has really been what his injury problems have been. But you do have to point about that. That's the big question on him, is like, how many innings is he going to give you? Is he going to give you 160, or can he give you 200? But regardless, you know, the innings that he's going to give you are at worst like number two stuff, and at best he's ace level pitcher. So Paxton can really be a guy who could pitch at the level of like peak Severino, really. Like, they could, if things go right, that's as good a 1-2 punch as there is in baseball. I put that up against Verlander and Cole.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to include
2 punch in baseball,
if you want to just bring it one more notch down, like, if you want to include Tanaka in there, like, that would be unequivocally the best 1-2-3 punch, I guess. Is there 1-2-3 punch? Punch, punch, punch. Is there three?
Punch, punch, punch. Yeah.
Punch, that would be the best punch, punch, punch in all of baseball.
I would say so, especially with what we know Tanaka can be. I mean, obviously he's been a little volatile during the regular season, but we're talking about a guy who's capable of, like, you know, tossing a complete game shutout on any night.
Yeah.
Which only a finite number of guys can say that in the big leagues. So having that as your number three guy, then with veteran lefties who are rock solid, like Happ and Sabathia, at 4 and 5. You take that to the bank, you know,
yeah.
6 days a week and twice on Sunday. There it is. I got it.
All right, dude. I got to run here. This was fun. We went for a little over 45. This was great. Our second annual opening day preview. So everyone can look forward to this. You could find Kevin Drain in Boston now. Yes. But more importantly,
in enemy territory.
In enemy territory. Oh, my God. Yeah, you're in Titletown, as they say.
Yeah, it's tough.
You can find him also in Boston, but also at KevDrain44 on Twitter. You can find me at WestonBlazy on Twitter and at Pod_Chill on Twitter. You know, one other thing about Titletown is, I'm pretty sure I looked this up one time, the Yankees have more titles than all Boston sport teams combined. Is that true? I would imagine that's true.
I'm not even going to look it up, but I'm just going to say that's true.
Yep.
And feel good about it.
Yeah, we don't need the research.
And I will use that next time I deal with
them. Yes. Yes, just say that. It's such a good shut the people down move. Like, it's great.
Yeah, it's a huge thing.
All right, bud. I'm going to watch Us, and I'm excited for Us.
All right, no spoilers. I'm going to watch it pretty soon, too, so no spoilers.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Later, Lanish.